Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, reporting from the heart of San Diego's East County. Today, we'll open with some national news from Public News Service's 2021 report, including highlights of President Joe Biden's address to the nation Thursday night, in which he announced that vaccines will be available by May 1st for all Americans age 16 and up. Next on our Capitol Report, we'll have a lot of details on what's in that American Recovery Act, the landmark COVID relief bill that President Biden just signed into law. There's a lot more than stimulus checks and unemployment benefits, so stay tuned to find out what else individuals, families, business owners, and others should know about this important new law. A vigil was held this week to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the mass shooting at Santana High School in Santee, and we'll have thoughts shared by the mothers of students killed in that terrible tragedy. In rural East County, mass livestock killings are believed to be the result of mountain lions in Alpine, Carvaker, and Descanso. Find out how to protect your livestock and pets on today's show. State wildlife agencies will be hosting some online programs soon on coyotes to help communities and residents learn how to coexist with these wily and adaptable predators, and we'll have details. From California News Service, we'll also have a report on efforts to make vaccine distribution more equitable in our state. County health officials have issued a warning for beachgoers due to water contamination after this week's rains. And on Crime Beat, hear about two shootings in Spring Valley, the latest in a series of violent crimes tied to illegal marijuana dispensaries there. Plus, learn about a pickup truck sought by La Mesa police in relation to a suspicious death of a man found mortally injured along Bancroft Drive. The City of La Mesa has taken action to cap food delivery fees charged to restaurants, and one local assemblywoman has introduced legislation that would do the same statewide. If you live in Santee, you may be entitled to a reduction in your fire insurance rates. Find out why on today's show. Daylight savings time is this weekend, so be sure to advance your clocks an hour ahead. The county has a new rental relief program, as well as aid to pay your utility bills, and we'll have more on today's show. If you have certain pre-existing health conditions, here's some good news. You're eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine starting Monday, March 15th. From California News Service, we'll have info on new outreach efforts to the LGBTQ community on COVID-19. Now that the weather's getting warmer, many San Diegans are starting gardens and home improvement projects. But before you dig, SDG&E reminds you to dial 811 to locate underground gas lines. We'll have more safety tips later on today. And finally, we'll have the weather report for our region and tell you what you need to know if you're considering a trip to the mountains to enjoy all of that new fallen snow. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for March the 12th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. President Joe Biden used his first evening address to the nation Thursday to announce he is directing U.S. states to open coronavirus vaccine eligibility to all adults no later than May the 1st. CNN reports it is a step, Biden said, that could allow for small Independence Day gatherings on the 4th of July. Biden told Americans that after a year of pandemic-related pain, finding light in darkness is a very American thing to do. CNN adds that Biden's remarks amount to the most aggressive timeline toward reopening yet, one that comes as COVID-19 cases drop, but as thousands of Americans continue to die from the virus each week. South Dakota teachers can now get their COVID vaccinations as new eligibility phases kick in a state that prioritized reopening schools last fall. Educators are expressing relief, including those who kept working under distance learning models.
Teachers are in the latest priority group for vaccinations, according to the state health department. Either through the federal pharmacy program or through state providers, staff across the state are taking advantage, including Carol Wader, who teaches second grade near Rapid City. She says throughout the academic year, she's felt a lot of pressure to follow safety protocols so she could keep going into the classroom.
I know that my students need me, and I know that I am the best resource for them in the classroom. So just by having this vaccine takes a lot of that pressure off of being afraid of getting sick and missing out on that critical learning.
She says they're still trying to catch up from lost time when buildings closed last spring. I'm Mike Moen.
And troubled by the lack of redistricting reform at the State House, voting rights advocates in Indiana are taking matters into their own hands.
Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana contends a broad swath of the state is unrepresented due to unfairly drawn legislative districts, noting that Republicans have held trifecta control of state government since 2011. So she helped create the Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission, made up of three Republicans, three Democrats, and three voters with neither political affiliation, ranging in age from 19 to 86. Vaughn says the commission is listening to voters' concerns about current district maps.
We're asking Hoosiers to weigh in on what criteria should drive redistricting here. Should we work towards districts that emphasize geographic compactness, or is it better to draw maps that seek to enhance political competition when and where it's possible?
The commission is holding virtual meetings for each congressional district. The next is tomorrow with District 3. Learn more or register at allinfordemocracy.org. Mary Sherman reporting.
This is PMS. Researchers are finding ways to clear up misconceptions and support undocumented students, dreamers, and international and refugee students. Lily Bolke reports for Soundbite Source. This comes as lawmakers consider reforms to immigration and higher ed policy.
The President's Alliance on Higher Education and Immigration has launched a new portal compiling federal and state data on the students they aim to serve, as well as policy positions and best practices. Gabby Pacheco with the Dream.us says the data is key for fighting misinformation about immigrants, including but not limited to what she calls the fear-mongering of the previous administration.
It helps young people across the country who are feeling the sense that they don't belong or that the country doesn't want them, that in actuality, that's not the case.
Members of the U.S. House are reintroducing the American Dream and Promise Act, which includes a path to citizenship for young immigrants.
Meantime, leaders of Southern organizations, including environmental advocates, have come up with a Green New Deal with a Southern touch.
More than 160 organizations have joined forces to build on the climate proposal in Congress in ways to tackle inequality as well as climate change. The Green New Deal is a smorgasbord of ideas, from reforming labor laws and the nation's energy grid to health care and affordable housing. Alex Easdale with the Southeast Climate and Energy Network says because communities in the South experience more climate impacts than any other region, they ought to have a say in creating climate policy.
A lot of times you have well-meaning people making decisions in terms of policy that impact communities. And they don't take consideration from the community. Those communities are going to impact at the design level of policies and initiatives and programs.
The Southern Communities for a Green New Deal platform focuses on issues facing people in the South. Republicans have rejected the Green New Deal, but are now pitching some of their own climate-related proposals. I'm Tramel Gomes.
And finally, it is something every parent fears. Their child has a life-threatening or chronic disease, and they often also face crushing medical bills. Mark Richardson tells us for many of these families, there is a program to help them deal with out-of-pocket costs not covered by their insurance plan.
The United Healthcare Children's Foundation recently awarded its 25,000th grant to an Arizona family to help cover their young daughter's treatment for a congenital heart condition. Scott Otto with the foundation says they began the program when it became clear there was a critical need to support families dealing with a health crisis.
Think of a child who is experiencing some level of need for health care. Could be something big, a cardiac event. Could be something small like ongoing asthma medication.
By the way, families do not need to have insurance through United Healthcare to be eligible. More information is online at uhccf.org. This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. President Joe Biden has signed the American Recovery Act into law. The landmark $1.9 billion COVID relief measure passed the Senate without a single Republican vote. In the House, San Diego's Democratic congressional members all voted in favor, while Republican Daryl Issa voted against the bill. The measure includes a new round of stimulus checks for most Americans, as well as extensions of unemployment benefits, but also many less publicized forms of aid, ranging from expansion of child tax credits to relief for restaurants, event venues, and other businesses hardest hit by the pandemic and more. One major element removed in the Senate version of the bill is a minimum wage increase, which the Senate parliamentarian ruled did not fit the rules required to pass the stimulus bill by a simple majority vote needed to avoid a filibuster and blockage by Republicans. The Biden administration is expected to propose a separate bill to address the minimum wage issue in the future. Now, here are some highlights of what the relief bill actually does. It includes stimulus payments of $1,400 per person for all individuals earning under $75,000. Married couples earning less than $150,000 will receive $2,800, and families will get $1,400 more for each dependent. Those payments would decrease for those earning above those levels, with nothing if you're making more than $80,000 per person or $160,000 for married couples. The bill extends unemployment benefits through early September and extends the $300 a week supplemental unemployment benefit previously approved earlier in the pandemic. It also waives federal income taxes on the first $10,200 of unemployment benefits for households earning less than $150,000. Now, there's also some targeted business relief. That includes a $28.6 billion revitalization fund for restaurants. That will provide grants of up to $5 million each to help restaurants recoup pandemic-related revenue losses. $1.25 billion in grants are included for event venues such as concert halls and theaters that have been shuttered for nearly a year. The bill also provides $3 billion to the aviation industry hard hit by reduced travel. A major element of the bill aims to reduce child poverty by 50%. It temporarily raises the child tax credit, which is currently up to $2,000 for children of all ages. Under the new law, that will increase to up to $3,600 for children under age 5 and up to $3,000 for kids ages 6 to 17. The new law also expands child and dependent care tax credit for 2021, as well as the earned income tax credit for workers without children. Now, to help those who need health care, the American Recovery Act temporarily increases subsidies for buying health insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, such as Covered California. It also provides billions of dollars to fund veterans' health care and public health programs. And for those who lost jobs and want to keep health insurance through their former employer, the law signed by President Biden also covers the full cost of COBRA premiums through September. The law provides $350 billion for states, local governments, territories, and tribal governments that have been hard hit by the pandemic. It also includes funds for vaccine distribution, COVID-19 testing, and contact tracing. And it allocates $130 billion to help K-12 schools reopen, with additional funds for colleges and universities. The new law also has funds for housing assistance, food aid, transit agencies, and child care providers. You can read the full text of the new law, which is several hundred pages, the American Recovery Act, in the politics section of our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
A candlelight vigil was held at Santana High School in Santee on March 5th to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the mass shooting that killed two students and injured 13 people. The shooter, 15-year-old Charles Williams Jr., known as Andy, opened fire with his father's revolver, forever silencing the voices of 14-year-old Brian Zucker and 17-year-old Randy Gordon. Approximately 100 people attended the vigil, including friends and family members of the victims. Rachel Maurice, who was a student at Santana when the shooting occurred, helped organize the vigil. She recalled that tragic day, stating, "People say you never get over it, and you don't. It's a journey." She said some students were so traumatized that they've never come back to the campus, adding, "It means so much to have the community support." Though Randy and Brian's voices have been forever silenced, Maurice urged survivors of mass violence to reach out for help and know that you're not alone. Marie Gordon Rayborn, mother of Randy Gordon, the Santana senior killed that day, said she received a letter from a student saying they were sorry they didn't do anything to stop Randy from being killed. There was no name on the letter, but Randy's mother has a message for the anonymous letter writer. I want to tell him or her that they shouldn't feel bad. It wasn't their responsibility to stop the shooter. It was their responsibility to worry about the dance, the prom, about being a good student. They shouldn't have to think or worry about a shooter, she says. Michelle McCogba, mother of Brian Zucker, the 14-year-old Santana freshman who was also killed, says her anguish is still raw. I come every year to put up pictures and remember Brian, she said. She recalls her son as someone who would go out of his way to help others and make others feel good. Her son loved Mustang cars, so his mother now drives a Mustang with a personalized license plate that bears Brian's name. The shooter, Andy Williams, was tried as an adult, though he was only 15 years old. He said he was a victim of bullying and didn't want to live anymore. He pled guilty to 2 counts of first-degree murder and 13 counts of attempted murder. He is serving a sentence of 50 years to life in prison, but will be eligible for parole as early as 2025. In 2018, Williams requested that his sentence be commuted, and others have appealed the sentence on his behalf, but to date, all of these efforts have been denied. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
An attack that left 10 livestock animals dead in Alpine may have been the result of a mountain lion. The Sheriff's Department had initially investigated the attacks as animal cruelty, but necropsy results indicate that the deaths may have been the result of a large predatory animal instead, says Lieutenant Anthony O'Boyle. The owners were out of town when the incident occurred at their property on Putz Valley Road. A relative, who was feeding and caring for the animals, found lambs, goats, and a ram dead. The Sheriff's Department is urging residents in Alpine to be aware of their surroundings and don't go outside at night alone. Protect your pets by making sure they remain indoors, especially at night. If you own livestock, make sure their pens are secure with a roof overhead. It is illegal to kill a mountain lion in California unless you have obtained a depredation permit, which may be issued after repeated livestock attacks when other means have failed. Reporting from Alpine for KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on that mountain lion story. 3 weeks after 10 livestock animals were killed in Alpine, residents of nearby Carve Acre now report additional livestock attacks that they believe are the result of a mother mountain lion and a cub. One woman posted on Facebook that a friend had several goats attacked on March 9th in broad daylight, shortly before 4 p.m. A veterinarian reportedly confirmed that one of the survivor's wounds were consistent with one or more mountain lions. Several neighbors reported seeing lion tracks. A couple residing near Carve Acre also reported seeing a mother and cub hunting near their home on February 26th, and they provided photos as proof. When the homeowner walked outside the next morning, the lions reportedly walked away. A resident on a Descanso Neighbors forum posted that she, too, lost a herd of goats a few months ago that she believes was due to a mountain lion attack. Now, mountain lions' preferred prey is deer, although they are known to attack livestock or pets at times. It is illegal to shoot or kill a mountain lion in California unless a depredation permit is obtained, and a property owner has to show that other means were tried first. There are, however, other ways to protect your livestock without harming lions. The Mountain Lion Foundation offers these tips to protect your livestock and pets. Keep pets indoors. Protect livestock with barns or covered pens at night or when mountain lions are most active. Mountain lions can jump over a 15-foot high fence. If a barn or covered pen is not an option, trained livestock-specific guard dogs can also scare off mountain lions and other predators such as coyotes. You can clear brush to dissuade deer, which is lions' preferred prey, as we mentioned. Timed or motion sensor alarms with flashing lights, loud noises, and even sprinklers may also scare off predators, including lions.
Due to an increase in reported conflicts between coyotes and people in our state, the California Fish and Game Commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will host a series of online workshops to help communities and residents understand the reasons for the increase and how to reduce future conflicts. The first workshop will be held on March 26th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Dates of additional workshops will be announced later. The main reasons why coyotes and other wildlife venture into populated areas is to search for food, water, or shelter. Human-coyote interactions are on the rise for many reasons, including increased urbanization, increased availability of food and water sources, and access to attractions such as pet food, human food, pets, and small livestock. Increased interactions between coyotes and people can lead to loss of pets and even coyotes biting people, as occurred recently in Northern California, though attacks by coyotes on adults remains extremely rare. Disease transmission is another issue. Severe cases of mange in coyotes have been linked to rodent poisons that leave the animals vulnerable to the disease, for example. The virtual workshops will provide discussion on human-coyote conflicts and integrated coyote management planning. The first workshop focuses on science and research about coyotes in the urban environment, as well as current laws, regulations, and roles for communities to reduce human-coyote interactions. Participants will join via Zoom and are asked to register in advance and take an online survey. To sign up, visit California's Fish and Game Commission website at fgc.ca.gov, as in Fish and Game Commission. Again, that website is fgc.ca.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Multiple groups are scrambling to find ways to make sure precious COVID vaccine doses are used by the end of each day instead of having to be thrown out. Some local clinics have resorted to vaccinating people who happen to be close at hand. Others have their staff members hurry to call in friends and family. Leah Russin with the advocacy group Vaccinate California is working with community groups in the Bay Area to create a more equitable system of waiting lists to improve outreach to lower-income communities.
A local community organizer, either associated with a Black church or a community center or a legal aid society, will have pulled together ahead of time a list of names of people that are otherwise eligible but haven't yet scheduled their dose.
A second site called HiDrB.com is gearing up to do something similar, but it is not yet active in California. Catherine Flores with the California Immunization Coalition says the problem is the sheer complexity of generating a waiting list that reaches the neediest patients while protecting people's privacy.
I think a lot of the states and a lot of the organizations were not prepared in a lot of ways. I think this is one of those things that they still are struggling with.
The state of California's website is myturn.ca.gov, where people can register to be notified when it's their turn to sign up for a regular vaccine appointment. Right now, however, only people over age 65 or in certain high-risk occupations are eligible. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Alexa Oslowski with a health alert. San Diego County health officials are advising the public to avoid water contact at all coastal beaches and bays due to urban runoff after the recent rains. Urban runoff can cause bacteria levels to rise in ocean and bay waters, especially near storm drains, creeks, rivers, or other outlets. The runoff can contain bacteria from a variety of sources, including animal waste, soils, and decomposing vegetation. Although some coastal storm drains have warning signs, many others do not. The county advises the public to avoid swimming, surfing, diving, and other water contact for at least 72 hours after a rainstorm. In addition to the advisory issued for all coastal waters, a beach closure is in effect from the Mexican border north to the Silver Strand in Coronado due to sewage-contaminated flows from Mexico. For updates, you can visit sdbeachinfo.com or call the 24-hour hotline at 619-338-2073.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Two shooting victims, both 22-year-old men, have been hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries resulting from gunfire outside an illegal marijuana dispensary in Spring Valley on Wednesday night. sheriff's detectives responded to calls of gunshots and found the first shooting victim, along with evidence of a shooting outside a dispensary at 9966 Dolores Street, as well as a firearm. A half hour later, a caller reported a second shooting victim believed related to the first. Deputies found him at a home in Spring Valley. The sheriff deputies remained at the shooting scene all night, where witnesses report many bullet casings and blood trails leading off the property. Early the next morning, sheriff's deputies, narcotics detectives, and a SWAT team served a warrant and raided the dispensary, where four people were holed up inside. Authorities seized marijuana, cash, and another gun. The sheriff asked anyone with information on these crimes to contact Detective Ventura at 619-660-7087 or call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 for anonymous tips. You can also download the P3 Anonymous Tip app at sdcrimestoppers.org. Tipsters may be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to arrest related to these shootings. The dispensary was not marked and was operating discreetly to avoid disturbing neighbors, unlike other illegal dispensaries, some in the same building, that have brazenly advertised with glowing green signage. Illegal dispensaries in the Spring Valley area have been magnets for crime, with numerous robberies and several past shootings. The process of shutting them down is complex and time-consuming. So new dispensaries pop up and reap windfall profits before being shut down, sometimes at the very same locations previously raided and closed. In some cases, cannabis entities are even citing religious status in an effort to skirt regulations, claiming constitutional protections under the Trump administration's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, although so far California has not recognized any such rights. Crime issues related to illegal dispensaries has led some jurisdictions to legalize cannabis sales, including neighboring cities of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and San Diego. Use, of course, is legal statewide in California. San Diego County supervisors earlier this year voted to ask staff to draft up an ordinance to legalize cannabis sales, manufacturing, and growing in unincorporated parts of the county, including Spring Valley. An action supervisors hope will largely take away the incentive for the illegal operators and provide consumers with safe access to products regulated for quality and purity. Legal dispensaries can be required to maintain security cameras, metal detectors, and other crime deterrents, and are more likely to cooperate with law enforcement. Democratic senators led by Chuck Schumer have announced plans to introduce a federal measure to decriminalize marijuana, which is already legal in 33 states. Although at the state level, many cannabis legalization bills have been championed by Republicans, showing bipartisan support. A Gallup poll in November 2020 found strong public support for legalization, with 68% of those polled in favor of legal marijuana, including 82% of Democrats and 48% of Republicans. The La Mesa Police Department seeks public help to solve a suspicious death. Jock Joseph Jock was found unconscious with head and shoulder injuries on February 27th, shortly after 9 p.m. on Bancroft Drive, just south of Golondrina. He later died of his injuries. Surveillance video showed a possible vehicle of interest described as a white Ford F-150 with extended cab, a silver metal toolbox, and possibly a missing front bumper. Police are seeking witnesses and tips to solve this case. You can report any tips to 619-667-7532 or call Crime Stoppers Anonymous toll-free tip line at 888-580-TIPS. You can also visit sdcrimestoppers.com. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000 through Crime Stoppers for information leading to an arrest in this case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, many restaurants have relied on delivery services such as Uber Eats and Postmates to boost business and bring food to customers at their homes. But some delivery services have been charging as much as 30% to restaurants. So a growing number of cities have recently passed ordinances to cap food delivery fees, including Los Angeles, San Diego, Chicago, and San Francisco. In East County, La Mesa recently approved a 15% limit on food delivery fees, in a measure proposed by Councilman Colin Parent. The newly adopted measure received strong support in public comment. Now, San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez has introduced Assembly Bill 286, which would cap fees charged to restaurants at 15% statewide. In an interview with East County Magazine, Gonzalez said delivery app services are offering these services free to customers, but are putting mom-and-pop restaurants in a precarious situation, since small businesses have no leverage to bargain with big companies. Gonzalez says she wants to protect mom-and-pop restaurant owners from being gouged by food delivery companies that she says have engaged in, quote, predatory behavior. But the delivery app industry contends that imposing limits on fees will harm their business model. According to KNPR, Postmates issued a statement indicating that capping commissions on food deliveries would, quote, kill the whole industry's ability to provide the services restaurants need to stay open during the national emergency. Consumers who want to support local restaurants and save restaurants from paying any delivery fees can opt for takeout or curbside pickup as alternatives. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Alexa Osowski.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The number of homeless people camping in and around Santee has increased over the past year, as well as along the entire San Diego riverbed. At this week's meeting of the Santee Community-Oriented Policing Committee, a representative from the San Diego River Park Foundation presented the results of a point-in-time count conducted in February. The week-long count focused on the San Diego River and adjacent areas, including Santee. It did not include direct contact with people this year because of the COVID-19 pandemic, says Jennifer Fry, program manager. Because of COVID, the counters estimated the occupants of vehicles and tents instead. For Santee, the count found 55 people homeless compared to 40 last year, a 37% increase. For the entire 15.5 miles of the San Diego riverbed from Santee to the Pacific Ocean, the total homeless count was estimated at 201, up from 158 last year. For San Diego, where the majority of the homeless were found, the main reason for the uptick was due to a big increase in folks living in vehicles, more than the previous 4 years combined. The homeless numbers have not escaped notice of Santee's City Council, which launched a new program just this month to address the issue that's confronting national, state, and local governments. Sergeant Michael Gonzalez with the Sheriff's Department spoke at the city's Community-Oriented Policing Committee meeting. He says, "The city notified us that there was an uptick in homeless, and so we put together a similar program that we're using in the unincorporated part of the county." The Santee Homeless Outreach Program and Engagement, or HOPE, consists of some sheriff's deputies and staffers from the county's Health and Human Services Agency, as well as the McAllister Institute, a nonprofit aimed at eliminating substance abuse and abuse. Eliminating substance abuse and Home Start, a nonprofit aimed at child abuse prevention and treatment. While HOPE had a single outreach event earlier this month, the results are encouraging, says Gonzalez. Of 10 individuals contacted, 9 accepted some level of services. That included food, clothing, and hygiene packages, medical and mental health referrals, housing vouchers, and one assist for an animal in distress. The team of professionals is under no illusion that they're going to end homelessness locally, but they are well aware that more common approaches used by law enforcement, citing or arresting homeless people, isn't working, says Gonzalez. Brian Gooters, Associate Director for People Assisting the Homeless, or PATH, a statewide nonprofit with an office in San Diego, says the latest point-in-time count by the River Foundation is not a surprise. He believes the most likely cause of the increased homelessness is COVID-19, since many people have lost jobs and can't afford rent payments. Even though California has a statewide moratorium on evictions, a lot of people don't know about it, he says. Gruters applauds the newest outreach program initiated by Santee, saying it's going to take innovative approaches to help get more people off the streets. The longer they're without a shelter, the tougher it is for them to get off the streets, he concludes, adding, the system doesn't always work that well for a lot of people. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice, This is Miriam Raftery.
If you're a homeowner or business owner in Santee, you may be entitled to a reduction in your fire insurance rates. The Santee Fire Department has just received a Class 1 Public Protection Classification rating from the Insurance Services Office, or ISO. That's the highest level available on a scale of 1 to 10. Santee is one of only 38 fire departments in California and 393 fire departments nationwide that's earned this distinction. The ISO rating is based on four factors: emergency communication systems, fire suppression capabilities, water supply, and community risk reduction measures. The new rating went into effect on March 1st. Home and business owners in Santee are encouraged to contact their insurance providers to ask if the Class 1 rating can reduce their insurance premiums. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
That old phrase, spring forward, fall back, is applicable this weekend. Daylight savings time kicks in on Sunday, March 14th, so be sure to set your clocks an hour ahead. And if you're traveling, be aware that Arizona and Hawaii don't recognize daylight savings time. Fire officials recommend changing batteries on smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, along with resetting clocks on daylight savings time, to make sure that you'll be alerted in case of an emergency. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
A massive public lands bill now headed to the U.S. Senate would better protect more than 3 million acres of public land, including 1 million acres in California. The Protecting America's Wilderness and Public Lands Act combines 8 pieces of legislation, including 4 that cover the Golden State. Belinda Faustinos with the nonprofit Nature for All says bills like the San Gabriel Mountain Foothills and Rivers Protection Act will make the wilderness experience much more accessible to families.
The U.S. Forest Service has managed the San Gabriel Mountains for purposes of water supply, which is critically important. However, there was very little attention paid to how it could be managed as a recreational resource.
In addition, the Central Coast Heritage Protection Act would benefit the Los Padres National Forest and the Carrizo Plain National Monument and would designate a 400-mile National Scenic Trail from L.A. to Big Sur. The Northwest California Wilderness Recreation and Working Forests Act would protect more than 300,000 acres, encourage wildfire prevention, and boost the outdoor economy. But opponents argue the changes could hamper jobs in logging, oil and gas development, and mineral extraction. Kate Hoyt with the Vet Voice Foundation supports the bills, saying public lands have played a pivotal role in helping veterans recover from the stress of deployments.
There's 1.8 million living veterans in California right now, and the ability to access these public lands has made it easier to transition back to civilian life, whether that's reconnecting with family and friends or hunting, fishing, hiking, and finding time and peace and solitude in the outdoors.
A fourth bill, the Rim of the Valley Corridor Preservation Act, would add 191,000 acres to the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area in L.A. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
What could be cozier than a lakeside fire on a springtime evening? Now you can escape pandemic quarantine by renting a fire pit at Scenic Lake Jennings in Lakeside. The fire pits are available on Friday nights, March 19th, March 26th, April 2nd and April 9th from 6 to 9 p.m. So you can grab some marshmallows and chocolate for s'mores, roast hot dogs, or get your best campfire and ghost stories ready. Advanced reservations and use fees are required, and the fire pits are available for up to 6 people in the same household only per county health restrictions. To reserve a fire pit at Lake Jennings, which is owned by the Helix Water District, you can call 619-596-1306. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lakeside, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Alan Acevedo with some important news about a new relief program for local renters. Low-income residents in San Diego County who have experienced a financial impact due to the COVID-19 pandemic can now apply for grants to help pay for rent and utility bills. To be eligible, households must be renting and have experienced a financial hardship related to COVID-19 or have qualified for unemployment during the pandemic. Both landlords and tenants can apply.
However, tenants will have to co-sign applications submitted by the landlord. The county's Emergency Rental Assistance Program is funded by over $100 million in state and federal monies. The county program is open to all San Diego County residents, except not the cities of Chula Vista or San Diego, which have their own separate programs. Even if you received rental or utility help before, you can still apply for outstanding rent or utility costs that have not been covered, says David Estrella, Director of Housing and Community Development Services. For more information or to apply, visit the county's Housing and Community Development Departments at sdhcd.org. The application period started March 2nd and is open for 3 weeks.
This is Alexa Oslowski with an important health update on COVID-19 vaccines. California has announced new COVID-19 guidelines that allow anyone over the age of 16 who have certain serious underlying conditions to receive the vaccine starting March 15th. The vaccine will be available for those over 16 with any of the following serious underlying health conditions or disabilities that would put them at high risk of hospitalization or death from the novel coronavirus: cancer, chronic kidney disease, chronic pulmonary disease, Down syndrome, weakened immune system from solid organ transplant, pregnancy, sickle cell disease, some heart conditions, severe obesity, and type 2 diabetes mellitus, and developmental disabilities, if COVID would limit their ability to receive ongoing care or services or impair their treatment of COVID. All Californians over the age of 65 are already eligible to receive the vaccine, as are frontline healthcare workers and others in Tier 1 and Tier 2A. Educators, first responders, food and agricultural workers are expected to have vaccines available within 2 or 3 weeks, followed next by those age 50 and over, regardless of whether they have any underlying health conditions. The Moderna and Pfizer vaccines currently available require 2 doses to be fully effective, with immunities built up about 2 weeks after each dose. The first dose provides approximately 50% protection, while the second dose raises that to about 95% effectiveness. Just as important, these 2 vaccines were found in testing to be 100% effective at preventing deaths and serious cases of COVID. The small percentage of people who received the vaccine and still got COVID had only mild to moderate cases. Neither of these vaccines is yet approved for minors under the age of 16. However, safety tests are underway on those ages 12 and up. After that, tests are planned for those ages 6 and up in hopes that vaccination of children will be possible within months. The Biden administration this week announced that it has purchased orders for enough Pfizer and Moderna vaccines to fully vaccinate 300 million Americans with both doses by July, or nearly the entire United States population of 323 million people.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Next up, we're going to replay one of our Best of East County episodes for you, visiting the famous Julian Fiddle Competition. Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old-Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally, according to the National Association of Music Manufacturers. And locally, 2 major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, "This is the music of the people," adding, "One person sits with and teaches another." Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that. Though played on the same instrument as a violin, he adds, fiddle music calls you to dance. Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old-Time Fiddlers Association, but he says the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddle and Pickin' contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, we have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations. Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and show fests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All 3 pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morning Star Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a 2-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shira was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her!" The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, 3 of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed Festival Waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Thank you. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the award's winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his fans. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we're going to replay one of our Best of East County episodes for you, visiting the famous Julian Fiddle Competition.
The pandemic has had devastating impacts on the LGBTQ+ community, so the group Equality California, which has 1 million members, has launched a bilingual statewide education and outreach campaign. Unveiled on Tuesday, the idea is to make sure people know when and where to get the vaccine and also to promote the science that shows the new coronavirus vaccines are safe and highly effective. Rick Chavez-Saber with Equality California says COVID-19 has taken a toll on the health and well-being of many in the LGBTQ+ community.
And that's particularly true for the most vulnerable members of our community, transgender and gender nonconforming people, LGBTQ+ people of color, and immigrants and people living with HIV or other pre-existing conditions.
The latest study from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has found the LGBTQ+ population is more vulnerable to COVID, in part because it also has higher rates of underlying health conditions, including cancer and HIV. Last fall, researchers at UCLA surveyed more than 12,000 American adults on the impact of the pandemic. Study co-author Kareth Conran says the numbers show COVID-19 has been especially prevalent among non-white LGBTQ+ people.
LGBT people of color were more likely to be positive, about twice as likely as non-LGBT white people.
Last spring, the Equality Institute launched a telephone helpline and an online help center at covid19.eqca.org to link people to employment services, food assistance, culturally competent healthcare providers, and testing centers. The bilingual portion of the site will be launched in the coming weeks. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Eberena with a public service announcement from San Diego Gas and Electric. SDG&E has issued a reminder to the public about the importance of calling 811 before you dig. Calling 811 or Underground Service Alert will help avoid possible injury or damage to hidden gas lines or service interruption. Damaging a natural gas line can pose a significant safety risk and disrupt natural gas service. Before digging, residents, business owners, and contractors should mark the proposed excavation area and call 811 at least 2 business days before the project is scheduled to begin. Underground Service Alert will contact all local utilities for free to have them locate and mark the underground lines, pipes, and cables they own. For more information about safe digging or to submit an online request, visit digalert.org. If you suspect a gas emergency or have questions regarding a gas odor or carbon monoxide, call SDG&E immediately at 800-411-7343. It's important to keep in mind that natural gas is flammable and that something as simple as a spark can serve as an ignition source. Use your sense of sight, hearing, and smell and any of the following signs to alert you to the presence of a gas leak. Look for the following: dirt or water being blown in the air, dead or dying vegetation over or near pipeline areas, a fire or explosion near a pipeline, exposed pipeline after an earthquake, fire, flood, or other disaster, and bubbles in puddles outdoors after a rain. You should listen for an unusual sound such as a hissing, whistling, or roaring sound near a pipeline, and you should smell for the distinctive odor of natural gas. However, although SDG&E adds a distinctive odor to natural gas to aid in the detection of leaks, you should not rely on your sense of smell alone to determine if you have a gas leak. For more safety information, visit sdge.com/safety.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's weather report. Heavy snowfall has blanketed East County's mountains with snow levels as low as 3,500 feet, and more could be coming soon. The National Weather Service reports a new storm starting Monday will bring strong winds, up to 2 more inches of snow in our mountains and light rains in other areas of the county. So use caution if you're traveling, and be sure to carry chains if you head to the mountains, and be prepared for snow jams or traffic delays. The Sheriff's Department and mountain residents ask that visitors please respect private property, park only in designated areas, and be sure to carry out any trash, sleds, or other items that you bring into the snow. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July, back in 2013. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org.